song for the broken hearted.
Good afternoon, National Football Post Nation, and welcome back to another edition of the College Countdown Podcast here at the National Football Post. I'm your host, Joe Fortenball, joined as always by co-host, co-anchor, good friend, director of college scouting here at the Post, Wes Bunning. Wes, how are your holidays, my man? You ready for a big, big game tonight?
Oh, holidays were great, Joe. I'm sitting in my new desk chair that I got for Christmas. I mean, I actually feel like a vice president of a company right now. I'm sitting higher level. Excited for the football tonight. How was your holidays, man?
Yeah, nice. You got a chair for Christmas. That just goes to show you are no longer a child. When you were younger, you got the cool toys, all the great gadgets. You grew up, you got the iPod, stuff like that. Now you get a chair. How do you feel about that? You feel good?
Well, you know, the thing I was sitting in before, I mean, probably all the podcasters that ever listened to us heard me squeaking in the background. Yes. So now it's nice and quiet. It has a nice little rest for me. So it's high level. I like it a lot.
You are a man that lives life on the edge, if I may say so. My holidays were good. As I was telling you earlier, I spent about 8 months shedding 30 pounds, only to put 12 of them back on in about 10 days. So I got problems of my own I need to work out before I go to Miami for the Super Bowl. Can't be fat and sloppy when I go down there. That's no place to walk around fat and sloppy is South Beach. I'll tell you that much right now.
No, and Joe, I mean, we heard you putting in the Rocky workouts, getting ready for San Diego, lost all the weight. What happened over Christmas break?
Chocolate-covered pretzels, cookies, gingerbread men, leftover food out the you-know-what. It didn't end. The fridge is stocked. I couldn't stop. Plus, I'm drinking wine every night. Then the games are on. I'm drinking beer. Next thing you know, you look in the mirror, and it's just, it's embarrassing. I'm going to put it at that. That's the word, embarrassing.
Well, let's get into some football, then.
Let's stop talking about all the issues I deal with on a day-to-day basis. Let's talk about issues two teams are going to have tonight. We got the Fiesta Bowl. This is the one you and I have been looking forward to since the bowl schedules and bowl games were announced back in December. The number 4 TCU Horned Frogs and the number 6 Boise State. I'm blanking on the mascot right now. I can't believe that. Wes, what's the mascot?
We're going to go with the Broncos, Joe.
We're going to go with the Broncos. I kept thinking Denver, and I couldn't get that right. All right, the Boise State Broncos, TCU Horned Frogs. Both teams coming in this game undefeated. TCU 12-0, Boise State 13-0. We're going to get to a couple of the stats in a little bit. I want to get your take going into this game. TCU is a very fast team. You and I spoke earlier. Tell me a little bit about the defense we're going to see tonight. It's an unusual scheme. Break it down a little bit for me.
Yeah, they're going to play 4 down defensive linemen, Joe, 2 linebackers, consistently play with 5 guys in the secondary then, so consistently in kind of a nickel. The thing that makes them so interesting, though, Joe, is Darryl Washington, the linebacker. The guy runs like he's a safety. 6'2", 237 pounds with 4.5 speed, kind of plays that hybrid linebacker, middle linebacker role. But as our friend Mike Lombardi always says, if your middle linebacker can run, he makes everyone on the defense look fast, and the defense plays fast as a whole. Really makes it tough for opposing offenses in the run game to consistently reach the edge, therefore consistently putting teams in third and long situations. And TCU might have the best senior defensive prospect in the nation, Joe, that no one's ever heard of, in defensive end Jerry Hughes. Guy led the NCAA in sacks last year with 15, follows it up with 11.5 this year, plays with good leverage, bend, impressive change of direction skills off the edge, and of course he has that first step speed to consistently reach the corner. I think if they can force Boise State in a lot of third and downs tonight, Jerry Hughes is going to have his way off the edge.
So a 4-2-5 base defense, this is going to be unusual for the common fan to watch tonight, because you don't see a lot of that, but that's what makes college football so great. Now let me ask you a question. When you look at the offensive side of the ball, TCU's been great defensively this year, but offensively, you know, they can hurt you there as well. You don't get the 12-0 because you lack somewhere on the football field. What makes this offense click, and what's kind of their bread and butter? What should we be looking for tonight?
Well, when we're talking about Boise State, They love to get the ball out to the outside. They got a running back in Jeremy Avery.
No, I'm talking about TCU. I'm sticking with TCU right
now. Oh, we're running with TCU? All
yeah, right. We're gonna do a little, here's how we're going to do it. A little TCU action, a little Boise State action. Then we'll make some picks and get into some other stuff.
Joe's throwing me curveballs already. All right, I'm ready now. If we're going to TCU then, Joe, you look at the anchors on the outside. Marshall Newhouse at left tackle, Marcus Cannon at right tackle. Newhouse goes around 6'3", 320. Cannon around 6'5", 350. So if you think, you know, these two meatheads on the outside can consistently push people off the line of scrimmage, create movement in the run game, and they have a running back in Joseph Turner, who's 6'1", 225, not a burner, looks like a 4'5", 4'6", guy on tape, but loves to lower his head, pump his legs, consistently wear down opposing defenses. What that does, puts quarterback Andy Dalton in manageable third and manageable situations, and he's been so accurate all year, very poised in the pocket. It's a tough 1-2 combo to slow down, but those two offensive tackles, Newhouse and Cannon, really do a nice job on the outside.
So a solid defense, a balanced offense anchored by the running game and a smart quarterback with a good offensive line. This sounds like a very impressive football team. From what I've seen this year, also very impressive to watch as well. Let's move to Boise State. We sit here, we're hyping TCU. They've got a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. Boise State, no slouch of a football team either, as they always love to play spoiler in big bowl games. This year, not necessarily a spoiler, very well matched up, but what are they going to have to do to counter against this TCU team?
Well, we talked about Washington and Hughes, how they can make plays sideline to sideline on the TCU defense. But Boise State has a running back, as I said earlier, in Jeremy Avery, 5'9", 180. And when this guy gets the ball in his hands, Joe, it's interesting. The tempo of the Boise State offense just seems to pick up. They like to get into that no huddle, flick the ball out to him. And this guy is so dynamic, so explosive, makes his cuts. He's so sudden at full speed, really tough to bring down the open field. So he's a guy who I think with some of their big play receivers playing tonight, he's a guy that needs to handle the load in the run game. Get the ball. Looks like an ideal third down back at the next level. Really impressive once he gets in space. So Boise State needs to make sure they get him either with the draws or with the screens out in the open field.
When you're looking to handicap a matchup like this, TCU is currently a 7-point favorite heading into this game. One of the key things you always want to look at is strength of schedule and who these teams have beaten during the regular season. TCU's not the type of team that everyone's watched on TV this year. Boise, you see a little bit more of because everyone knows the blue turf and they play some Thursday night games, so they get some national recognition. But here's what you might not know if you're thinking about the Horned Frogs tonight. They've got wins against Virginia, Clemson, BYU, and Utah. BYU and Utah, both bowl winners this season. TCU beat Utah 55-28. They cracked BYU 38-7. They won close ones against C.J. Spiller and Clemson 14-10, and then they took down Virginia 30-14. They have been battle-tested. On the other side of the football, Boise, not so much. The big win in week one, 19-8 over Oregon. We all remember that as the LeGarrette Blount game, which nice fumble against Ohio State, by the way. I was really pissed about that for reasons we won't mention. But and in addition to that, a nice win over Fresno State, 51-34. Wes, when you take a look at these schedules, doesn't it scream more that TCU is the pick in this game based on the fact that they've won on the road, they've played tough competition, you know, they're battle-tested, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about the Oregon-Boise State game, and so much was made of that with LeGarrette Blount. But the thing that gets overlooked is Boise State didn't travel to Oregon and beat a good opponent on the road. They forced Oregon to come there. Still a good quality win, but would have been more impressive if they went on the road. TCU, on the other hand, goes cross-country, goes to Clemson on the East Coast, and beats a team that could have ended up being in the ACC championship was in the ACC championship, could have ended up winning it in their own backyard. That's an impressive win, playing anyone, any place, anywhere, and then beating in-conference opponents Utah and BYU, cracking them, like you said, three very impressive wins.
Yes, sir. Let's get to the injury questions before we make our picks in this one. Why don't you break down some of the guys that are playing banged up or could be out for this game? Start with Boise State. I know there's a couple interesting names.
Yeah, Austin Pettis is the big one. 6'3", 202-pound, possession-type receiver. Led the nation this year with 14 touchdown catches. a big possession type guy in the red zone. Not a real burner, but does a great job with his short area quickness, getting a step on corners and boxing them out from the play. So that'll be interesting. Him and Titus Young, he's supposed to play tonight. Titus Young's kind of the vertical threat. Coach Chris Peterson guaranteed that Pettis will be a factor in tonight's game. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how healthy he is tonight.
TCU side of the football, I know they got some guys on the defensive side of the ball banged up. Break that down for me.
Yeah, interesting. We talked about just Pettis and Young right here, two talented wide receivers. Well, TCU has two talented corners in their own right in Priest and Sanders. However, Raphael Priest is out tonight with a foot sprain, putting a lot more on corner Nick Sanders tonight. They're going to have to go to the Young secondary at times. They play a couple sophomores that they like to rotate, but Nick Sanders needs to hold down his side of the field when matched up with Titus Young, allowing TCU to roll defenders over in the secondary to help out on Pettis. So a big burden tonight for Sanders with Priest out.
And one thing to keep in mind with this game, and this is a game I can't emphasize enough, you have to watch it. It's going to be a great one. Both of these teams, their fan bases, they're going to travel well. TCU, not accustomed to playing in BCS bowl games. This is going to be a team that brings a lot of fans, as does Boise, great fan base. They're going to travel as well. This is going to be a great atmosphere. Bunning, moment of truth before we move on to some other analysis. Who you got tonight?
Joe, we're going to go back to last year's Poinsettia Bowl when TCU actually beat Boise State in this exact same matchup a year ago. I believe it was 18-17 was the final score. Andy Dalton's improved tremendously. Faster on defense, Jerry Hughes off the edge. I like TCU to win this one.
TCU to win is what Bunny's going with. In the bowl pick'em pool, I have Boise State. I love the fact that they were getting 7 points. I believe that's what it was like a month ago when we filled this thing out. Now as we get closer to the game time, still a 7-point favorite in this one, or 7-point dog, I should say. I'm switching the pick. Now, in the bowl pick'em challenge right now we've got going on, I'm 17-12-1. I'm tied for second place. So I'm winning some games this year. Last year, you remember, was a disaster. I had to fight my ass off to get the 500. This year, I've got a little comfort zone moving into the bigger games. I'm switching to TCU. Bowl pick'em, I'm going to keep it at Boise State. For podcast purposes, I'm going TCU. I like the Horned Frogs tonight. Bunny, you've done a great job selling me. And one thing I always look for, speed, speed, speed. Speed kills. TCU's the faster team. Lock it up. Now, let's move to a couple other things we wanted to talk about, recap some of the big performances from bowl season to date. I want to start with Texas Tech. Very impressive win against the Michigan State football program from the Big Ten, which is a conference that's been putting out some winners this year. Texas Tech coming off the Mike Leach firing, rallying, winning by 10. What did you see in that game that you liked, Wes, on both sides of the ball? Who were the key players that stood out come draft time, which is going to be a few months from now?
Well, honestly, Joe, when you look at Texas Tech and what they were able to do, with Mike Leach getting fired, I think the team as a whole played with that chip on their shoulder. Consistently working on special teams, offense and defensive, flowing to the football. And I think the tempo of the entire Texas Tech team was really able to overwhelm Michigan State. But some guys I like, Brandon Sharp, the defensive end, 6'3", 254 pounds. I think he had 14 sacks this past year. Isn't a real burner off the edge. But what he does, he's sudden on contact, is able to slip blocks and get after the pressure, get after the quarterback. Drops his pad level well. I thought he had a pretty good game, as well as Edward Britton, the wide receiver, and Colby Whitlock, the defensive tackle. Another undersized guy, 6'2", 287, but explodes up the field, a one-gap guy. I think he's a junior right now, but I think with some time, he'll be able to mature into a potential NFL starter at the next level.
I'd like to spend a minute on a game that for some stupid reason I didn't flip away from, and it was arguably the worst football game I've ever watched in my life. That would be none other than Oklahoma State, Mississippi. Absolutely pathetic performances by both offenses, turning the ball over left and right. Jevon Snead and Ole Miss. Snead was a dark horse for the Heisman. Ole Miss was one of these teams that was supposed to contend for a title this year. Oklahoma State, this was the year they were supposed to make some noise. They knocked off Georgia in week one. That clearly ended up being a meaningless win because Georgia wasn't very good this year. I watched this game. Both teams, pathetic is the one word I could use. What did you take away from this? Was there anything that impressed you in this game?
Well, Dexter McCluster, Joe.
McCluster, of course.
The running back from Ole Miss. I mean, the guy plays at another gear, and it was almost embarrassing to watch at times when this guy gets in the open field, how slow Oklahoma State, the defense, can be. Johnny Jerry inside, offensive guard, 6'5", 350 pounds, consistently was able to move Oklahoma State defenders off the line of scrimmage. And Greg Hardy had a couple matchups with Russell Okung, possibly the best senior offensive tackle in the country, really struggled to disengage, couldn't reach the corner. He's been banged up. But I like Russell Okung in that. I thought he did a real nice job. But other than that, really unimpressed with the talent of Oklahoma State in that one. Zach Robinson just didn't pique my interest. This guy looks like a guy who might have to go to a Canadian Football League at the next level. Really struggled to throw the football down the field.
They were awful. Both teams were awful. Just when you think, whoever you picked in this game, just when you thought you were completely out, you couldn't win, they'd get a turnover, then they turn it over right back. I think there were like 12 turnovers in that game. It was abysmal. And another point, how the hell do you move the Cotton Bowl out of Cotton Bowl Stadium to Jerry World? Call it the Jerry World Bowl moving forward if that's what you want to do. I'm starting to get sick of seeing that damn stadium all over the place, most notably because my Eagles lost there yesterday and they have to go back there next week. So I'm not a huge fan of that stadium right now. Couple other games I want to get to. I'm going to briefly go over this. Mallett looked like a bum against East Carolina. We're talking about Ryan Mallett, quarterback from Arkansas. There's nothing to talk about there. Let's talk about a game you wrote up last week. Two marquee players. One showed up, one didn't. The one who didn't, it wasn't necessarily his fault. Tim Tebow, quarterback from Florida, in the 51-24 drubbing of number three Cincinnati. Marty Gilliard, the wide receiver from the Bengals, meant the Bearcats, limited for most of the evening. What did you take away from Tebow's performance? I know a lot of people are fired up saying this helps his draft stock, you know, over 500 total yards. But come on, Wes, you've watched Cincinnati this year. That defense got shredded by everybody. I mean, was it that impressive? Is this going to get Tebow, you know, consideration to be an NFL quarterback?
Well, the thing is, Joe, what it does is, and I shine the light on this on my article, if he didn't have a big time game with 4 weeks to prepare for a not, like we said, an unimpressive Cincinnati defense, the expectations of him being an NFL quarterback fall dramatically. So he came out and did what he had to do pretty much and dominate an undermanned, unimpressive Cincinnati defense. He played well.
Let me cut in real quick. So you're saying he had more to lose than he had to gain?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a good way to say it.
Yeah, and I was impressed. And, you know, the thing with Tebow, and sure, you can make fun of his release and how elongated it is. Sure, he lacks ideal timing. But the guy has the accuracy and he has the arm strength to make NFL throws. Now, we're going to need to rework his mechanics. His footworks get sloppy at times. He's going to need to learn how to decipher defense. But he was able to make some big-time throws in that game. The natural talent is there. I think he warrants a spot as a developmental NFL quarterback. Now, is that a first-round pick, a second-round pick? I don't know. But when I grade him out, is he a bona fide NFL starter? No. He's a guy that has the ability to start at some point, but there's a lot of development that needs to take place before he'll be able to do so.
What about Marty Gilliard? Did this game hurt his draft stock? You got to figure quarterback Tony Pike was under constant pressure all night. He didn't have much time to get the ball out there. Gilliard had a lot of attention paid to him. Did this game hurt his status?
I think when we look at Marty Gilliard, and when this guy gets a free release off the line, Joe, he's so explosive in and out of his breaks, great balance, can catch the football. But he's not an elite burner down the field. He's not a guy that can consistently outrun NFL defensive backs. Therefore, teams that aren't intimidated and cornerbacks that aren't intimidated by him, like most Big East corners are, they'll get up in his face, they'll press him off the line and dare him to run by them down the field, which he was unable to do versus the likes of Joe Hayden and Janoris Jenkins. In the NFL, every corner is going to get up in his grill. They're going to press him off the line and dare him to run down the field. I didn't think he did a good enough job to project as a guy on the outside at the next level. I think he, best case scenario, is a number two guy in the NFL. But I think ideally you kick him in the slot, you let him line up off the line, and he's that slot receiver, the number three guy in the NFL. But you can't expect him to consistently beat press coverage in the NFL on the outside, because if he's unable to do it versus Florida, how's he going to do it in the NFL?
Two games to briefly go over. Florida State decides to show up for Bobby Bowden's last game. Very impressed on their end. 33-21 over a solid West Virginia team. A game near and dear to my heart, the alma mater, Penn State Nittany Lions, in an offensive shootout against LSU win 19-17. That was the under bet of the millennium, as you saw the rain pouring. The field was a mess. You knew no one was going to get anything going in that one. I'm very impressed with LSU quarterback Jordan Jefferson and head coach Les Miles figuring out how, once again, to mismanage the game in the final seconds as you watch time tick off. Wes, what are you thinking when you were watching that? Were you laughing like I was?
Laughing and then watching Lyle Height, the offensive guard, violently pull off one of the Penn State defenders to push him back.
Bowman.
Yeah, Navarro Bowman to push him back another 15 yards just when you think, well, maybe they might be able to get in field goal range. Just an absolute debauchery of game management at the end of one. Ugly LSU, if they can find a way to lose a game, they will. So much talent down there, but just the head coaching by Les Miles, the football IQ of the players that they actually have. It's just an ugly program right now, to be honest.
And Bowman actually said after the game that the dude who pulled him off shouldn't have gotten flagged for that. He goes, we all know what I was trying to do. I was laying on the pile trying to run out the clock. So he deserved to pull me off. I thought that was pretty awesome that he admitted that. Let's move to the Rose Bowl. This was, I'm going to admit, I didn't see this one coming. Ohio State and Terrell Pryor, who I'm going to stop bashing this kid because he looked real good. 26-17 over an Oregon team that – proved yet again the Pac-10 is a joke this season as everyone's gotten rolled. Congratulations to USC for their impressive win. And UCLA came east and took down Temple. That was also very impressive. But outside of that, awful display by Oregon. They couldn't get the ball going. What did you take away from this game? Let's talk about Pryor for a minute. He'll be back next year. You know, the kid's starting to come around. He's making good decisions. You know, what did you take away from his performance?
Well, he's making better decisions, Joe, but they still have a pretty good leash on him right now. When you watch the game, he threw three routes pretty much. He threw the slant, he threw the fade, and he threw the wheel route down the field. That's about it. So before we, you know, say this guy's the next Vince Young, the next big thing in college football, this is a vital year for him to take that next step from a progressions and intelligent and a deciphering defensive standpoint, that he'll be able to take that next step and be able to, you know, throw more than three routes consistently. However, with that being said, he still did a nice job, made some plays when they were there, and his ability, the guy looks like he's moving in molasses once he gets going, but he just has that strider speed. Guys struggle to get proper angles, strong stiff arm, consistently able to buy time and create outside the pocket, really posed Oregon, that defensive side of the ball, a lot of problems.
Ohio State's defense was impressive in this one, too. Every time it looked like Oregon was going to try to get back in it, they forced a turnover, they got a stop, they did something. You know, they were just a well-rounded team. It was a Big Ten performance. It was Ohio State looking good. You know, they deserve all the credit in the world. That was an Oregon team that was coming in hot, and Ohio State stomped them pretty good. So we'll give them the credit there. Wes, last thing to talk about. This is non-bowl related. The NFL draft order pretty much set as of right now. Number one in the draft will be the St. Louis Rams. That comes as no surprise. Number two, the only team they beat this year, the Detroit Lions. As of right now, let's play a little mock draft general manager. Top two picks. Where do you see the Not the Rams. The Rams. They're number one. The Rams.
We're going with the Rams, Joe. As we've talked about before, if you want to be competitive in the NFL, you need to have a franchise quarterback, someone that, you know, the team's able to build around, that can make big time throws, lead you in the toughest situation. I think the Rams right now, they're going to have to pick between Sam Bradford or Jimmy Clausen. A lot of question marks with Bradford and his injury. Jimmy Clausen, never that real winner at Notre Dame. So the big variables on both sides of the ball. But I don't think they can take a guy like Ndamukong Suh at number one overall and then hope in the second round they can pick up a Colt McCoy or a Tim Tebow. I think they need first pick overall, they need to solidify that quarterback position, because let's be honest, Kyle Bowler, Mark Bolger, they're not going to cut it. Those aren't franchise quarterbacks. Number two, the big guy from Nebraska, and Ndamukong Suh, I think he solidifies the interior of that defensive line for the Detroit Lions. They have their franchise quarterback in Matthew Stafford, and Ndamukong Suh goes number two to the Lions.
You know, the Lions make a couple moves in the offseason, you know, maybe get someone for the offensive line, get one or two defensive players, draft a guy like Sue and maybe one or two other guys that can come in and contribute. So the wheels are starting to turn up there. I'm not saying they're going to go out, win 10 games next year, but it's you've got, like you said, Wes, you've got the franchise quarterback, you've got Calvin Johnson, you've got Pettigrew. Now you get a guy like Sue in there who, let's face it, we both love him. You know, we both think he's the best player in college football right now. But the thing is, you know, the Rams can't afford to not take a quarterback. It'll set them back another year. So that's another problem. So when you look at Detroit, this is an organization that they could really start to put the pieces together over the next few years. Yeah, it's only two wins this season, but they were competitive. They were a competitive football team, and they were competitive down to week 17 when they made a run at the Bears. So I'm going to give Jim Schwartz a little bit of credit in his first year. I know no one else is going to do it because it was only two wins, but this is a team that a few more moves improve the talent level on this team. And, you know, they might win some games. I'm certainly not going to pick them for the playoffs or anything like that. So let's not get too far. I'm going to calm down here for a second. But all right, that about wraps this one up, Wes. It is Monday afternoon. TCU, Boise State tonight. I know you're going to be watching it. I know you'll probably be in sweatpants. You might be in those sweatpants in your brand new chair that you got for Christmas, which, again, congratulations on that. I'm very happy for you. I'm even more happy for my ears that don't have to hear the damn squeaking the old chair had to make. So any last words before I cut this thing down?
Well, I'm saying we're going to have a big podcast tomorrow, Joe, previewing our boy Matt Bowen's Iowa Hawkeyes versus Georgia Tech. We'll see if we can get him on the line, have a little three-way, have some fun, take some shots at his Hawkeyes. But I like them tomorrow, too. But look forward to tomorrow's podcast.
Easy with the three-way talk. Say three-way conversation.
Three-way conversation. Sorry. Right. Yeah.
That's what you do. You gotta, you know, just come on. Come on. but yeah, we'll see if Bowen can join us. Very busy man. Very difficult to get on the phone. He's very busy for tomorrow's game. So we will be talking Iowa. I'll be sure to bring my pillow because I could really care less. They're a boring football team to watch. But no, I'm just kidding. I got Iowa tomorrow, but we're going to save that for tomorrow. Bunning, excellent job as always, my friend. For everyone who tuned in, thanks for stopping by. Enjoy TCU Boise State tonight. It's going to be a good one. Stop by tomorrow afternoon and check us out once again. So long, everybody. Smile.